Welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for concerts by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, January 24th and 25th. At Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. These performances will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The guest soloist will be pianist Stephen Huff. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Overture No. 1 in E minor, Opus 23 by Louise Ferentz. And that will be followed by the Symphony No. 4 in C minor by Franz Schubert. Then, following the intermission, the symphony returns to the stage along with guest pianist Stephen Huff to perform the Piano Concerto No. 2 in B-flat major by Johannes Brahms. And now I'll begin our reading of the symphony notes. First, some information about our guest pianist. Stephen Huff combines a distinguished career as a pianist with those of composer and writer. Named by The Economist as one of 20 living polymaths, he was the first classical performer to be awarded a MacArthur Fellowship in 2001 and was made a Commander of the Order of the British Empire in 2014. Huff's most recent appearance with the North Carolina Symphony and Grant Llewellyn, performing Rachmaninoff's first piano concerto, opened the 2016-17 season in Raleigh and Chapel Hill. Huff has composed many works for orchestra, choir, chamber ensemble, and solo piano. His Mass of Innocence and Experience and Missa Mirabilis were respectively commissioned by and performed at London's Westminster Abbey and Westminster Cathedral. A noted writer, Huff regularly contributes articles for The Guardian, The Times, The Tablet, Gramophone, and BBC Music Magazine, and he wrote a blog for The Telegraph for 7 years. His book, The Bible as Prayer, was published in 2007. His first novel, The Final Retreat, in 2018, and Rough Ideas, a collection of essays and reflections, in 2019. Huff resides in London, where he is a visiting professor at the Royal Academy of Music and holds the International Chair of Piano Studies at his alma mater, the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester. He is also a member of the faculty at the Juilliard School. Now, information about the program. The first work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony is the Overture No. 1 in E minor, Opus 23, by Louise Ferentz. Ferentz was born May 31st, 1804, in Paris, and she died in Paris on September 15th, 1875. The Overture No. 1 was premiered in 1834. Its first performance, or it was composed in 1834. The first performance was in 1835 in Paris. Now, here's the story. There are few better examples in the history of music of innate genius, rigorous training, steadfast ambition, and sheer hard work overcoming seemingly insurmountable obstacles than Louise Ferentz. She was born in Paris in 1804, into a distinguished artistic family. Her father and brother were both Prix de Rome winning sculptors and started studying piano and music theory at age 6. At 15, she broke a significant gender barrier by being accepted into the previously all-male composition class at the Paris Conservatory. 2 years later, she married Aristide Ferentz, a flutist at the Théâtre Italien, respected teacher and founder of a music publishing firm. During the 1830s, Louis Ferrand established an impressive career in Paris as a pianist, composer, and teacher, and undertook several concert tours around the country. She began composing seriously during those years, not just small pieces for piano, but also large-scale chamber and orchestral works, including two piano quintets, two piano trios, a nonet and sextet for mixed ensembles, and sonatas for cello and violin, as well as two overtures and three symphonies, which received notable performances. Hardly any other significant French composer was then writing such challenging abstract works. In 1842, Ferrand was appointed piano professor at the Paris Conservatory, and she distinguished herself in that capacity for the next three decades, the only woman to hold such a prominent position at the school during the entire 19th century. When Louise Ferrand died in Paris on September 15, 1875, she was regarded as one of the foremost female musicians of her time. Now here are some listening tips. Each of Ferrand's two overtures follow a well-crafted and finely orchestrated sonata form. The overture number one opens with an introduction whose broad gait and noble gravity pay homage to the opening of many of Haydn's mature symphonies. The main theme is swift and agitated. The complementary subject, begun by the clarinet, is lyrical and more relaxed in mood. The development section skillfully weaves the lyrical phrases of the second theme with the restless rhythms of the main theme. After a full stop, the earlier music ideas return to close this unjustly little-known work of one of the 19th century's most gifted musicians. The instrumentation for the overture number one in E minor is as follows: two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, timpani, and strings. Next on the program, the North Carolina Symphony performs the Symphony No. 4 in C minor, catalog listing D417, and that is called The Tragic Symphony by Franz Schubert. Schubert was born January 31st, 1797 in Vienna. He died November 19th, 1828 in Vienna. This work was composed in 1816. The first performance was November 19, 1849, in Leipzig. August Ferdinand Riesius was the conductor. Now here is the story. Between 1814 and 1816, Schubert worked as a teacher in his father's school in suburban Vienna. He cared little for the situation and soothed his frustration by composing. He wrote nearly 150 songs, four symphonies, a mass, and other church music, piano pieces, and a half dozen operettas and melodramas during this period of time. The Fourth Symphony was completed in 1816, though it was not premiered until more than two decades after the composer's death. Sometime after it was finished, Schubert appended the word tragic to the last page. The term may have referred to the composer's dire financial situation at the time, or to the stormy nature of the first and last movements, or to the powerful heroic emotions of Beethoven's compositions that he was trying to incorporate into his large instrumental works. Here are some listening tips. For the first movement, the symphony opens with a stern introduction that leads to the bustling main theme given by the violins when the quick tempo begins. The contrasting second theme is not so much lyrically peaceful as emotionally tethered. A compact development section is based on the stormy main theme, although it recounts earlier thematic materials. The recapitulation dispenses the movement's emotional clouds with a final coda and a bright tonality, C major. Now the second movement, had Schubert intended this to be a truly tragic symphony, he would not have allowed the second movement to glow with such sweet serenity. The third movement, though marked menuetto, is closer in spirit and technique to one of Beethoven's rousing scherzos. The theme of the central trio recalls the opening gesture of the first movement. And finally, the fourth movement, the finale, resumes the troubled and impetuous motion of the first movement, but the close of the symphony turns to the joyous key of C major, the tragedy, such as it was, transformed to triumph. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: for two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. And following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage, along with guest pianist Stephen Huff, to perform the Piano Concerto No. 2 in B-flat major, Opus 83, by Johannes Brahms. Brahms was born May 7, 1833, in Hamburg, and he died April 3, 1897, in Vienna. This piano concerto was composed in 1878 and 1881. The first performance was November 9, 1881, in Budapest, conducted by Alexander Erkel, with the composer as soloist. Now here's the story. In April 1878, Brahms journeyed to Goethe's land, where the lemon trees bloom. Though he found the music of Italy ghastly, he complained of hearing one opera that consisted wholly of final cadences, he loved the cathedrals, the sculptures, the artwork, and especially the countryside. Spring was just turning into summer during his visit, and he wrote to his friend Clara Schumann, "You can have no conception of how beautiful it is here." Still under the spell of the beneficent Italian climate, Brahms sketched themes for his second piano concerto on his return to Austria on the eve of his 45th birthday. Other matters pressed, however, and the concerto was put aside. 3 years later, during the spring of 1881, he returned to Italy and was inspired by that second trip to resume composition on the concerto. The score was completed by July. Whether or not the halcyon influence of Italy can be detected in the music of the Concerto No. 2 is for each listener to decide. This work is certainly more mellow than the stormy first concerto, introduced more than 20 years earlier. Whether that quality is the result of Brahms' trips to the sunny south or of a decade of imbibing, Viennese Gemülichkeit, or simply of greater maturity, remains a matter for speculation. Here's some listening tips for this one. The first movement, the concerto, opens with a sylvan horn call, answered by sweeping piano arpeggios. These initial gestures are introductory to the sonata form proper, which begins with the entry of the full orchestra. Of the many ideas presented in the exposition, most are lyrical, but one theme is vigorously rhythmic. The development uses all of the thematic material. The recapitulation is ushered in by the solo horn. Now, for the second movement, it is rare for a concerto to have more than three movements, but the second movement, a scherzo, was added by Brahms to provide a contrast within the overall architecture of the work. And the third movement, this movement is a touching nocturne based on the song of the solo cello heard immediately at the beginning. An agitated central section gives way to long, magical phrases for the clarinets that lead to a return of the solo cello's lovely theme. And then the fourth music, the finale, fuses rondo and sonata elements in a style reminiscent of Hungarian gypsy music. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: solo piano, two flutes, one doubling piccolo, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Dr. Richard E. Rhoda. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2020 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.